on the Coyote Sports Network. From Learfield, this is the YokeCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics, taking you inside the stories of Coyote athletes, coaches, administrators, and more. Now, here's your host, John Thayer.
Hey, what's up? How are you? Welcome back to a new season of the YokeCast podcast. Great to be back for season number 8. Can you believe that? 8th season of the YokeCast podcast. If you've been with us since day number 1, thank you for continuing to listen and support the YokeCast podcast. If you're new to us, welcome to YokeCast. My name is John Thayer. Throughout the course of the year, I'll take you on a tour through conversations with players and coaches and administrators. Our goal is to help you get to know the people you're cheering for and also just bring you some of the information surrounding college athletics as it continues to be, kind of fluid, and we learn about new things throughout the course of the entire season. So we're back for season number 8, fired up for it. If ever you want a certain athlete or administrator that maybe you have an idea that we should have on, we should hear from, let us know. Feel free to reach out and let us know, and we'll see if we can certainly make it happen. But we'd love to get the different student athletes on in all the different sports and talk to so many people here throughout the course of the year on the YokeCast podcast. Make sure you download and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. You'll get notifications anytime we get a new podcast episode. These generally will come out on Thursdays, and we'll get you set up for events throughout the course of the season. We ended season 7 with John Schemmel, the athletic director, so why not start season number 8 with our athletic director, John Schemmel, and get the very latest from him on just NCAA and athletics and college sports and all of it as a whole. We'll have that conversation coming up here in just a moment. Also, Media Day happened for the Missouri Valley Football Conference back in July. During that event, I had a chance to catch up with Nathan LaPerry and Tyson Bowes. Both are players who emerged last year and making plays for South Dakota, one on defense, of course, and one on offense, and both are going to be expected to be key players and have key roles in the team for the team this upcoming season. So I'm going to share those conversations with you here in podcast episode number 1 for season number 8. Let's get it started with John Schemmel. He's the athletic director at the University of South Dakota. Hey, Coyote fans, a new season of Coyote Athletics is upon us, and we're getting excited for it. I know you are too. Of course, John Schemmel, the athletic director, excited for another year. John, before we get into all that, did you get a chance to take a break during the summer a little bit, get a little vacation, a little refresher as, you get ready for another season?
You know, I actually did. It was great. I got away, went to northern Wisconsin for a week. First time since I've taken this job that threw the phone away, didn't take a work call, not a work email. It was a really surreal feeling, but a lot of fun and really, you know, credit to our staff and our team here just to be able to do that. But you know, going into the third fall, there's been a lot of change over the last 2 years for sure. But it starts to feel normal now, and I think it's starting to feel normal for our team and our staff, and there's a lot of synergy and a lot of retention with our staff, which is very helpful, and so a lot of excitement there, but definitely got away a little bit and felt amazing doing that, and very thankful to be able to do so.
And now you get back at it, and I mean, over the last couple of weeks, we've seen the fall sports kick up in camps, and football, soccer starting its regular season. Volleyball, by the end of the week, we'll have played an exhibition match. Football's not that far away. I mean, it means the busy time's coming, but it's I think it's fun and exciting to see the student athletes back out here.
100%. Hope springs eternal, right, every year. So, you know, you go into every single fall, there's new energy. You always have new faces. Even though there's a lot more transfers in the world that we live in today, you're still bringing in, 100 freshman student athletes every year overall that come in wide-eyed, and that's always fun and refreshing. This is my favorite time of year for a lot of reasons. It's there's so much energy, optimism. Like I said, it's new for 25% of the student athletes, no matter what, and that naturally brings energy in. You know, but the coaches and the student athletes never leave anymore. They might get breaks here and there, especially football, basketballs, volleyball. You know, they get a few long weekends and maybe a week here and there. Other than that, they're here 12 months a year. It's always exciting and things are off and running. And I mean, soccer's already played a couple exhibitions and kicking off here in the next few days.
Crazy how fast it comes. And before we know it, we'll be deep into the heart of fall sports season. Yeah. You mentioned earlier, there's been a lot of change over the last couple of years. One of the big changes over the course of the summer, I know we talked about it a few months ago, Nike.
Yes.
Right? We've made that switch. So new apparel everywhere. And anybody who's been around here, if they haven't yet, all the walls have been redone. Yeah. Everything has changed with Nike. Great partnership.
Yes. One we are so excited about. One, Nike and our student athletes have been elated watching their responses to their lockers, to getting their stuff. That's been real. That's been very genuine excitement. But also the BSN aspect of the partnership, I think, is where our fans are going to see a really big difference in accessibility to our stuff, to the stuff they see our kids and our coaches wearing. So there's so many aspects of that that are incredibly exciting. One that, you know, Alexa Rudine and her team really deserve a ton of credit. It has been a massive lift for them, really, over the last 12 months. All the ordering into Nike started about a year ago once we signed the new contract. So all the administrative stuff was done last fall into the winter. But then January through June, you're still in Adidas school, but all your boxes of Nike are starting to come in. So it has been a monster for them. And then obviously this summer, executing that transition. If anyone deserved some time away, it's her and her team, and they did a hell of a job. But we are incredibly excited about it, and I think our fans are too.
Yeah, I don't think we could do it justice to say there were boxes, but there were boxes upon boxes upon boxes.
Yes.
Filling rooms, yep. Just waiting for the opportunity and July 1st to come around. So the Nike era is well underway, and obviously people will adapt to that as we go. One of the other changes right here where we're at, this a couple of years ago became an opportunity for fans to sit and watch football games from the end zone view, right? And now the Midco Club is formerly the Dome Club. Now we know it as the Midco Club. And we get these windows. They get to bring the atmosphere right here into the room.
Yeah, really grateful to Midco. They've been a tremendous partner of ours for at least two decades now and really critical in making Coyote games accessible to our fans, especially in South Dakota and in the region. But with this gift, taking this space in particular, which has been a good space, but as far as game day environment, non-existent. The windows didn't open, and for those that don't know, they were soundproof, and not sure what went into that decision when it happened, but the ability to open the windows up will be tremendous. We're adding additional season tickets to sell in here because of that, because we think the interest will go up for sure. But it transformed the space. We've painted every wall. We've added TVs. We've added 100-inch or close to 100-inch TV over there. So it kind of, I tell people all the time, if we had 10 more suites, right now, we'd sell them tomorrow. So our fans are screaming for more premium opportunities, and this is part of we hear you in providing that. And I'm excited with future dome renovations, we'll be able to add additional suites and more premium spaces. But the Midco Club space is transformative, and I think the fans are going to be really excited when they see it. And these windows are really easy. They come up and pull back. They're hydraulic. They stay open. And I watched our scrimmage in here the other day and took a couple work calls in here and sat here and watched it, kicked my feet up. It was tremendous. So it's definitely changed the space, and I think Kyle fans will be really excited about it.
Enjoy it, but don't be the first person to drop your phone or dome dog out the window, right?
That's right. There is still a little ledge here, so if you dropped something over the railing, you had to try. To drop it over the railing, for sure.
Another change coming at some point. I'm going to ask you when or how close we're getting. But obviously, we look at this space, and this has been used for many years by so many student athletes. Yeah. We've been talking about the new track building, the Gasson Family Track Building that'll go up here just not too far away. It's going to really expand opportunities for our student athletes. Where are we at in the process of that project?
Really, we're in a good space there. And I think I'll start the answer with, you know, this isn't a pipe dream or something we're hoping happens. It is happening. We are just about done with the final design. We've hired the architect and the construction manager at Risk. We will be doing a groundbreaking ceremony, I believe October 2nd, the Friday ahead of D-Days. More information will come out shortly on that. What all is going over there, track, so men's and women's track, men's and women's cross country, and triathlon will all be moving over into that facility. So give or take, that's 120 student athletes will be leaving the Dakota Dome again, which creates more space over on the east side for the sports that remain in there for us to renovate and redo those locker rooms. Coaches' offices for those sports will go over to the field house as well. And so it'll be certainly a track-focused facilities, but we'll have tennis practice courts, we'll have netting for softball to hit. There'll be other things that we can do in that space, but it's set to be a transformative, state-of-the-art indoor track and field space. And you know, we've already informed the Summit League that we're going to host the 28-29 indoor championships, and we will be in that facility at some point during the 2028 calendar year. Which is really exciting. And so just another facility that provides other opportunities for us to bring significant events to Vermilion, both high school, college, and then just other events. And so things that we used to do in the Dome, that the Dan Lennon track events that has lost some luster over recent years, that can kind of re-explode back into that facility. But other high school events that we'll be able to bring, and we're very confident it'll be the best indoor regional or the best indoor track facility in the region for sure. And so we're really excited about that. And there'll be final designs we'll be able to get out here publicly with the groundbreaking and after that.
Well, one way to get a project deadline is to commit to a conference championship.
Yeah, then that's right.
You got to get the darn thing
exactly
done
right.
Before
exactly
you go
right.
into that. One thing that I just saw is that you know, Yote Fund has been a big part of athletics, and I know there's always the conversation, why can't we just call it the Howling Pack? We got the Yote Fund, whatever. But a great year, record-breaking year for Yote Fund, and that doesn't happen without the effort of a lot of people and our generous, not only fans, but donors as well.
Yeah, I think and this, we're either just announced as we're talking or will be announcing here tomorrow, but the Yote Fund raised over $32 million in this last fiscal year. Which is 50% higher than our previous record high, which would have been 2012 when we had another $20 million gift. And really what that means is since its inception, the Yote Fund has raised almost $50 million. I think it's about $47 million. And so it has been really, Logan and her staff and the Yote Fund team have been tremendous with that. Our donor response has been unbelievable. And really the whole model is to be more centered around the fans and more, whether you're buying $10,000 worth of tickets or $10,000 worth of donations, it all adds up and it all matters into your points. I think donors have really appreciated that, and bought into that. It allows them to put their philanthropy more where their passion is, and then focus on tickets and things they want from a fan experience standpoint and have it all matter. So it's been tremendous, and it, you know, to the point of why can't it be Howling Pack? You know, it's not that it couldn't, but what I would say, I went through something similar when I was at Miami University. We had the Red and White Club. We launched the Miami Athletic Fund while I was there. We had the same debate: do we keep the name the same? And really, what it is you know, the Howling Pack and some of those old school annual scholarship giving models. If you don't change the name or you stay consistent with it, it actually adds a layer of confusion for people that are coming in that might have been more resistant to giving to that because I just want to give directly to tennis. And so we debated that quite a bit. The Howling Pack Scholarship Fund still exists, is still every bit as critical. The support there is every bit as critical as it always has been. But the rebrand is really designed to bring that other group of people in that might have been resistant to it. And really that's the only reason for the shift. And hopefully our fans are getting used to that and getting accustomed to it. And certainly the numbers, participation numbers are up, money's up, cash is up, commitments are up. And of the $47 million we've raised in the last 2 years, it's less than $3 million that are tied to bequests and in-kind. So it's $44-ish million all in cash coming in the next 10 years. That's how we can transform this campus. That's how we can start to make significant changes and have more competitive teams across the board. And I think we're seeing that.
Important to note, those decisions don't just happen like that.
Yes.
You pointed out a lot of discussion, a lot of debate, a lot of conversation goes into that stuff before it gets unrolled.
100%. And the former Howling Pack board, now the Yote Fund board, I remember when I first started here sitting down with Scott Fiedler and Dan Radigan and Jeff Nelson and people that have been with the Howling Pack board since its inception, Michelle Maloney. Decades-long volunteers that built the Howling Pack from the ground up, and having these conversations, and it's because of people like them, and because of their buy-in, and because of their support, that we're able to not only do it, but do it with success. So a ton of credit goes to the Yote Fund board. In fact, I'm meeting with them here this afternoon, and. But they've been tremendous, and they're as loyal as it gets. And at the end of the day, right, it's all about USD. It's all about this logo, that logo, and most importantly, it's all about the student athletes. And when you have people buying into that and remembering that, we're all fighting for the same thing. We all want the same things. And when we can all kind of come together and center around that, great things happen, and that's what we're seeing with the Yote Fund.
Our hope is to continue these conversations throughout the course of the year. We're going to talk about things like this. We're also going to talk about things at the higher level, and our hope with that, John, is that you can help educate us on what it means for the University of South Dakota, the FCS, the Missouri Valley Conference, mm-hmm. the Summit League, all of that, and help people understand. So let's get into some of those NCAA things. Like, there's been obviously some recent hot topics, and a couple of them that kind of are together. You got the Protect College Sports Act, which is a push above us that's trying to make it fair, right?
Yeah.
Because not all NIL and all of that is created equal. So you got that, and then also the age-based eligibility, which people are kind of known now as 5 for 5 in a way, mm-hmm. Depending on when you turn 19, mm-hmm. when you start college, all of that. So those things together, like, how does that affect us today? And what are you watching on your radar as it does trickle down eventually to our level?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. I think the biggest misconception for our fans, for Coyote fans, is, well, this doesn't impact us because they're talking about $40 million caps. And it very much impacts the University of South Dakota and how we do things here. One, even if they're talking about $40 million caps, there's the trickle-down effect, right? So at some point, we just need a cap. So we're not continuing to push 20, 30, 40% increases every year. So there's that, and that does all have a trickle-down effect for us. But more importantly, good things are happening. If you go back now, even to last summer, we had no control, right? And then the House settlement was put into place. And while that didn't just magically fix everything, it did bring in some clarity. It reintroduced some governance, all good things. We opted into that health settlement. I think 90% of Division I has opted into that now, and I would imagine it'll be 100% here in the next year or two. And so that happened last summer. Then just this past spring, the NCAA and the Division I membership, really the Division I governance, which is made up of the membership. I know everyone's always critical of the NCAA, and at times rightfully so, but for the most part, the NCAA is the membership, right? It is athletic directors and administrators that serve on the committees, student athletes now, that are implementing these things. And so the big thing this spring was age-based eligibility. And the easiest way to boil it down is your 5-year clock starts either when you enroll on any campus, even if you're not a student athlete. If you enroll on a campus, your clock starts, or your 19th birthday. And whichever happens first is when your clock starts. And then you only get 5 years from there. And so there's no more red shirts, there's no waivers, there's no medical red shirts. You come in and you get that time period for those 5 years, which was overwhelmingly supported by the membership from the SEC and the Big Ten, all the way down through the Summit League, Horizon, everybody else. And having alignment from the very, very top through the rest of the 32 conferences has been the biggest challenge. Most things in the last year or two, we've had alignment between 28 to 30 conferences. It's been the Big Ten and the SEC where that alignment has stopped. And that's led to a lot of the issues that we've had, because so much of the money is controlled in those two leagues, and they know it. Mm-hmm. And so the alignment of the age-based eligibility was critical. All 32 conferences were aligned in that, and that's why it was implemented. And when it was implemented, it did not include the 2022 class, and I know we'll talk about that in a second here too. But then you have the Protect the College Sports Act, which is a federal mandate that they're trying to implement, that the University of South Dakota strongly supports. Again, the Big Ten and the SEC were the last two leagues to jump on board with that. They did kind of at the last minute, but it was a little bit late, and which is why I think they didn't want to rush it, and so they're going into recess, and they'll hopefully revisit this in September. And while the Protect the College Sports Act, none of the financials directly impact USD, because they are implementing caps, but those caps are way, you know, 40, 50 plus million dollar type things. There are restrictions in there that are great for the University of South Dakota. There are things that related to agents. There, you have to go through a process to become an agent, represent any Division I student athlete or any student athlete for that matter. That's a good thing. There are a lot of really bad agents out there that have led a lot of these kids into bad decisions, bad directions, bad negotiations, which is tainted relationships with coaches and other things like that. So that would be a great thing for all of us. There are restrictions on transfers, which is desperately needed. I think for the most part, I hear more about the unlimited transfers than I do about the unlimited money right now. I mean, the unlimited money is draining and exhausting, but I think fans are more tired of the unlimited transfers. And I agree. I think it makes it harder to be a fan. And the part of what makes college great is that loyalty and that continuity of teams. And so it would be what's in there right now is you get one free transfer. And then after that, you'd have to sit out a year. But then you put that in, and now I have a 5-year window, and you can make money in that 5-year window. Sitting out a year would be a hard pill to swallow. And so that would be a really good thing. So, and there are several other things that, you know, there's much, much more in that. But those would be the two things I would highlight for our fans that are very relatable. And so we are very supportive. You know, if people out there, you know, I tell everyone, reach out to your senators, your congressmen and women. It is very much something we're supportive of. Very, very great for student athletes. It you know, basically codifies that they can make money that can't go back now. You know, and then there's a lot of protections for women's sports and non-revenue sports in there too, which is great for Olympic sports and college athletics in general.
NIL gets all the attention. You mentioned the House settlement. I think it's important to kind of circle back to that, because I'm not sure that people fully understand all of that quite yet. And just the importance of the partnerships that USD and Learfield get with partners, and then buying a ticket and all of that. The House settlement helps take some of that money, right, and funnel it back to the student athletes.
Yep.
I think that's really important for people to understand, because now the more people we can fill up here with the Sanford Coyote Sports Center, the more we can help athletics as a whole.
No doubt. And what has been allowed, what's been payable to a student athlete, what's been allowed in a scholarship, that definition's been redefined 20 times over the last 50 years. And so the ones that are absolutely opposed to student athletes getting paid, I would encourage them just to look at it that way. We've done that, you know, cost of attendance is a way to put money into student athletes' pockets beyond a scholarship. Alston scholarships, that's another way to do that. All things that donors have been excited about. And then revenue sharing is just the next step of that, where you're directly sharing revenue with a student athlete and paying them. True NIL, in my opinion, is something that should have never been illegal. Any student, any 18 to 22 year old kid that walks on any college campus, but here at USD as well, if you were a med school student and you were here on a full ride, you could absolutely go do an advertising deal with some medical device and get paid to do that. Mm-hmm. Why that was ever restricted for student athletes, I don't know, right? And then if you restrict it too long, you know, we have what we have. And that's really what happened, right? We never changed our definition, and we waited too long to modernize, and it blew up in our face, and we could all see it coming. And so, you know, as much as people want to get caught up in the emotion of, you know, it's ridiculous to pay the student athletes, like, I would encourage them to look at it more through that lens. Like, why could a company pay a dental student and not a basketball player if they wanted to do a marketing deal with them? Now, obviously, there's a whole other realm of that. Do I think student athletes should be getting paid $5 million a year to play a sport? Absolutely not. I mean, there are plenty of college quarterbacks that are going to make seven figures that are never going to be good enough to play in the NFL. And a guy on an NFL roster might make $400,000 or $500,000 to play at a higher level. So I think that's where we've lost ourselves a little bit, but that's not what we're dealing with here at the University of South Dakota. I don't think it's ever going to be what we're dealing with here at the University of South Dakota. Whatever the future holds for us, FCS, FBS, like, we're never going to be dealing with that. And, you know, I think we're always going to be about bringing kids in here. It's always going to be about higher education. It's always going to be about graduating our student athletes. But, it's damn sure always going to be about competing, too.
Yep.
And we've got to do this to compete. And bring in the best student athletes, and that's what we're doing. And our fans have been a huge part of that, and we're in a great position here heading into this year.
You know, as we talk about the eligibility, you mentioned the 22 class, and recently in the last week or two, an injunction was granted by Judge Charlotte Sweeney in Colorado that now says the 22 class has to be given a fifth year of eligibility. This just came down.
Yeah.
Fall camps are underway. Rosters have been pretty much set for the most part around the country. How does that affect us here with coaches and their rosters and their set, mm-hmm. and how they're set and how they tried to bring in some of these athletes? I mean, it seems very complex to have it right now.
It is. And I think that's, again, I'll go back to the membership made this ruling, right? The membership voted this in top to bottom. And we voted it in without this. It's the high school 2022 class that this affects. And it's that the portion of that class that didn't redshirt, right? So they exhausted their 4 years, never used a redshirt. But they used their 4 years of eligibility. And so ultimately it was, everyone wants to trash the NCAA for trying to, you know, again, it was the membership that voted this in. Without that 2022 class. And I was not in those meetings. That's the Division I cabinet making that vote, but we as a league, we as a school, put our support behind it. I certainly did as well. And part of it is as simple as you have to draw the line somewhere. No matter what, there's going to be a class that's the one that's left out.
Yep.
And all told, it's a pretty small group of student athletes. And that really, I think, was where we were trying to go. Who does this affect the smallest amount? And really that's what this is. So how then it impacts and what's going on today? To your point, John, it is. It's very tough. Our rosters, for the most part, are set. We're governed by roster limits. So some coaches here and at other schools knew this was a possibility, and maybe left a spot or two open on their roster. So what we've told our coaches, one, under no circumstance are you cutting a kid to bring a kid in. And I don't walk on full ride anything, absolutely not. We wouldn't do that initially with the house settlement. We're not doing that now. And they've made their commitment to us, and we're going to remain committed to them. So our coaches, no one's arguing that, right? Everyone, part of being a Coyote is loyalty and that commitment, and that'll remain. And so let's say hypothetically a coach does have room on their roster and they have the money then in their budget to do so, then they could certainly go out and explore bringing one of those student athletes in. But then we know the NCAA is appealing this and they're trying to have a stay on the ruling, all these other things. And I think that's why you haven't seen much movement in this market, is the NCAA has made it very clear their intent to fight it to all of us. Mm-hmm. So are we really going to bring in someone that a week from now, a month from now, 3 months from now might be ruled ineligible? Well, if they rule, potentially then, if they rule them ineligible, they could say, and if you played any of them in a game, they could say you forfeit those games. I mean, so there's so many different things that could happen with it that make the timing of the ruling a huge challenge and a little bit of a head scratcher. I'm all for student athlete. I mean, I've fought for student athletes all along, and I believe in that. We're here to provide opportunities for them. But what I would say is ultimately these student athletes today are getting things. There's never been a better time to be a student athlete, right? And I would say the same thing for that 2022 class. They were part of the group that changed it for the better. And they got to experience phenomenal years in this era. And if it holds and they're out playing, I wish them all the best, and I'm sure we'll have some here and we'll bring them in with open arms. But that's really kind of how it all came together, why the decision was made the way it was. And I think why you're seeing a little bit of hesitation in bringing these student athletes in is there's just still so many unknowns with it. And it's so late. It is so late. And so had it been a June or early July ruling, I think there's at least a little bit more time to react to it. And we'll see where it goes.
One of the things that's relatively recent as well is the FBI and the NCAA have partnered to try to protect student athletes from sexual exploitation, gambling harassment, things like that. Never been a better time to be a college student athlete. But at the same time, there's never been more access to student athletes than there is today with social media and some of that. So this partnership, and I think I read that they spent $44 million to fight this last year. So the effort continues to protect student athletes because the access is there to them. I know our athletes want to have great relationships with fans. You see them all the time talking to kids and grandmas and grandpas and everybody around and fans who just want to wrap their arms around them and just be a fan, right? But there comes a time where there's some challenges with that. This is an interesting partnership with the FBI trying to step in and really help protect our student athletes.
100%. I think, the examples and what's kind of spurring this action with the FBI, I'm not sure we've necessarily seen those types of things here, thankfully, at the University of South Dakota, but certainly aware of them. And we all see social media, right? Social media in general is so full of hate today and athletics. I've certainly had my share of runs where I'm putting social media away for a couple weeks. I'm also 43 years old and I can deal with that a little bit differently than others. But, I think from just that, the social media bullying or just fans being hateful on there, all the way to some of the gruesome things that the FBI is referring to that are, I won't necessarily repeat here, but about as grotesque as you can imagine. With what they're doing with people's information, profiles, pictures, images. It's pretty, pretty terrifying. And so I think when it comes to the worlds that have been exposed now in a different way, the gambling, all of these other things that bring in new audiences, which is great in general, someone might become a fan of X student athlete because I put a $100 bet on them and now that bet didn't hit, and now, I hate that student athlete that I know nothing about. And so it brings in all of the negativity that comes with that. So one, I think a lot of educating our student athletes, making sure they understand how to control their brand in a good way, and interact with fans in a good way. Try and understand on some level how to ignore it at times. And really we do educational things when it comes to the betting world. We use a software called Prohibet that if any student athlete tried to make a bet or even logged on to a DraftKings website or something like that, we would immediately get alert and shut it down. And so there's ongoing education with all of that. And then, of course, one thing that we were one of the first to invest in kind of in the Summit League and at our level is just the mental health side of it. We have Tanner runs our mental health program here. He's been tremendous. Many of our student athletes utilize him in his office. And we're continually looking at ways to expand on those types of things. But just constantly looking at the overall well-being of our student athletes and the mental side of it is much different than it was 10 years ago, even 3 to 5 years ago. And so making sure we have resources around them to keep them safe, happy, educated and aware as to all those types of things. You know, there's certainly never been a better time to be a Coyote student athlete. But there is a lot that comes with that, John. There's no doubt, and we're continuing to find ways to put needed resources behind them for all of those types of things, and very grateful to have the resources to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's important that our fans understand that when these student athletes come onto campus, they get sat down in a discussion and they get yeah. educated on a lot of this stuff, right?
Yes.
And you hope they're listening and understanding.
Yep.
But that's why we also, as you mentioned, offer the support of many different things. I mean, I know our student athletes, they're well aware. They could go ask about 10 people
yep.
really quickly a question, and the answer would be found for them on if they could get themselves down a tough road or
yep.
whatever support they need. I know that's been important to you and
yep.
this university.
Yeah, every team kind of has their introductory meeting, and it's a long meeting, and they get a lot thrown at them. But there's a lot of important things now from, you know, artificial intelligence and academics. There's education session on that. To gambling, to traditional compliance, to where's the mess hall, right? All those types of things for the freshmen. They're getting all of that thrown at them. They typically get it all thrown at them in one long day, one long meeting. And while that's maybe not ideal, it's also what our student athletes and coaches want, because they'd rather do all that in one meeting or one day and then get back to it, get back to work. And so, but there's a lot more we throw at them. It's not quite as simple as it used to be, but we're continuing to do everything we can to make sure they have a great experience. That's for sure.
Might be a tougher day than those 100 degree practices.
I think there's a few of those kids that would rather run a few gassers than listen to that for sure. But I don't know, when it's 100 degrees out like it is
right.
today. I think they'd all take the AC and listen to it. But our student athletes are tremendous. I mean, we're 2 full years in a row now with every team GPA being above 3.0. I think that was the biggest question I think we all had, with all these transfers, are academics just going to plummet? It's been the opposite for us, which is incredible. That means our coaches are recruiting the right kids, our kids are doing the right things, we have great people around them, both in the athletic department and on campus. And you know, I think no matter what, and I've said this to a ton of people, we've got to do what we need to do to make sure to stay competitive with our peers, right?
Yep.
We can't be woefully off in facilities or what we have available for rev share and all these types of things. But as long as we're within the ballpark, the University of South Dakota does the rest. And I don't just mean the people in our athletic department. I mean from President Gestring to our staff and faculty on campus, they're second to none. And I think we have great majors and great people on this campus. And when we get them here, and if our offers are within striking distance of our peers, and the ones we're competing against, more often than not, they're Coyotes. And I think that's something we should all be proud of, and I know I am for sure.
Last thing for you, I know you mentioned earlier the track building and what that can do for bringing events into Vermilion, and obviously we love having the high school football championships
mm-hmm.
right here in this building, and made news a couple of months ago that the Dakota Farm Show will be moving out of this building, and I know that raised a lot of concerns, but for you, I know it's important to have that relationship with this community
yeah.
and to continue to bring, I mean, you look at Coyote Game Day, we bring people in that get hotel rooms and food, and even visiting teams when they come to play us, right? They're eating here locally for the most part in basketball and volleyball and all of that. So how do we continue to strengthen that partnership with athletics, the University of South Dakota, the community leaders of Vermilion, to continue to strengthen everything together and keep bringing events right here?
Yeah, I think even just at the start of that, all the way when that started almost 50 years ago, USD was playing 4 football games a year in the Dome. We've played 7 and 8 respectively. That's stretching out the season in the Dome and the turf needing to be down. If we play when we play in a national championship in football, that'll mean turf's down until January 15th. So even just the natural schedule of our football season with the goals that we aspire to go beyond that calendar. But I think beyond that, with the field house coming up, having a turf down facility in the Dome, and you're talking about 130 yards by 60 yards, the amount of things that we'll be able to do in the winter months with a turf down facility, I think far outweigh a farm show. We're already doing 7-on-7 type things in the spring. We've already partnered with a group that when it is turf down, we'll be doing that in February as well. It also changes our ability. You know, I had to send softball and other, I'd have to send them to Arizona. All these other types of things, we can train in here now in those. So it does take care, first and foremost, of Kyle student athletes. They do not go home anymore. So that's a big thing. But beyond that, other types of events, one, state high school football, we're continuing to work with them to bring those events here. We are looking at expanding our high school football offerings, trying to create some Dome Classic type weekends where we bring in other high schools during the regular season to compete in here. We're bringing in swim meets like crazy now, already happening. Obviously with the indoor track, that'll drastically change things. But all of those types of things too, we'll always bring in outside events. We're looking at bringing a UFC fight to the arena this spring. In fact, I'm very confident that's going to happen. That's going to sell that arena out for sure. We look forward to that. Things that we can do that our staff is trained to do. We are here to run athletic programs, athletic events, athletic-related events. So, things that our staff can do and handle. And two, that don't shut our facility down. An event like the Farm Show shut us down for 7 to 10 days. I think everyone thought it was 2 or 3. It was 7 to 10 days. We still have 300 student athletes in here that we would kick out of this facility for 7 to 10 days. And it's just different now in Division I athletics. We just can't do that. But I'm excited about the things that we already know we're bringing in, and even more excited when we bring these new facilities online, of what opportunities come available to us, like the 7-on-7 already has. You know, and these are things that are bringing in 300-400 high school kids and their families. They're staying overnight because it's a weekend-long event. We're already seeing these types of things happen. We've already had weeks and weekends where restaurants have maybe not been prepared in the community, so we're already trying to make sure we're communicating better with the VCDC and the city of Vermilion on all these different types of events. We're always going to be Vermilion's team, and we're always going to need Vermilion to embrace us. Change is always hard, and I certainly understand that aspect of it. But with the things that we're already doing and the things that we'll continue to do, we'll far surpass something like that. For me, I envision with these facilities, it's really about making Vermilion a year-round destination. That's what's going to bring in more commerce, more hotels. It's not going to be one standalone event. But bringing these things in here, and we'll have the facilities to do that. All that, and I haven't even mentioned just Vermilion High School, obviously continuing to play in here, and I know we continue to offer them basketball if they want it, it will continue to expand those offerings as well, certainly with track and other things.
Well, all those partnerships are important and change is part of the growing process as well. I know you're well aware of that.
For
you've
sure.
been trying to grow everything in the last few years since you've been back here as a athletic director. John, greatly appreciate your time. I know you're busy this time of year as we get the sports fired up, but I'm excited for a new season of Coyote Athletics. I know you are, and I hope our fans are too, because this feels like it could be a really fun year.
Yes, it could. And like I said, this time of year, hope springs eternal, right, every August. And but really appreciate the time and certainly appreciate everyone out there listening. And as always, go Yokes.
That is John Schemmel. He is the athletic director at the University of South Dakota, continues to try to elevate Coyote Athletics and take us to that next level. Next level meaning we're competing for conference championships and postseason play beyond conference tournaments and all of that stuff. And he's continued to help make splashes along the way that's setting South Dakota up for a great deal of success. At Missouri Valley Football Conference Media Day last month, I had a chance to catch up with Tyson Bowes, who is a wide receiver for South Dakota, who's coming off a season last year where he had 19 catches, two of which he hauled in for touchdowns, hoping for a big, big year of scores from Tyson Bowes this season, the redshirt senior from Dublin, Ohio. Tyson, you get ready for another season, and if you look at this offense, what do you see out of the offensive unit right now as we get into fall camp?
I see a bunch of explosive playmakers. I feel like there's all of us that want the ball in our hands. Charles, Key, me, Braden, Tanel. I feel like we just have a lot of playmakers that are ready to go out there and just work.
What do you feel like your growth has been in the program the last few years that has set you up for the opportunity ahead?
I feel like just going, me going out there and just executing the plays, and then just my assignment, making sure I'm assignment sound every play, and just making the team better.
Take us through a play. What are you looking for? You know, when you line up one on one with somebody, what are you looking for as you try to separate yourself and get yourself in position to make a play?
As a receiver, our receiver coach preaches like the coverage triangle, so making sure we understand what the coverage is before the play, and just if you understand what the coverage is, it makes everything easier on how to win your route and just to win the play.
You've seen some different coaches at your position, you know, in your time here. Is that been hard to adjust to, or what is the adapting process like when you get a new position coach?
For a while it was hard, obviously, just having to prove yourself to a new coach every year. But I felt like Coach Walker has came in and has been like a real help to us receivers and just preaching on us every day and making us better a lot.
You look at the wide receiver room. We got some speed in there. Got some guys that you said want the ball in their hands, things like that. What do you see out of this group?
We ready. We want it. We want the ball. We want the ball in our hands every play. I mean, if we could, we would throw the ball every play. But, you know, we love obviously helping the run game, blocking. But I feel like we got a lot of dudes that are going out there, get their nose dirty, and going to help us succeed a lot in this year.
You know, a lot of people are going to talk about that quarterback battle. What can you do as a receiver just to go out and help whoever emerges be the guy and help this team where it needs to go?
I just need to go out there and be myself. I don't have to be someone I'm not. Just be a reliable target for whoever the quarterback is and just let him know I'm always going to be there for him.
You've seen this program continue to build and be a playoff contender every year. How do we do that again? What's this group as a unit need to do to make this program continue on the climb?
I'll just say start fast. I feel like last year we came off on a slow start, and then we started having to reflect on ourselves. So I feel like right now we just are preaching on just getting tight, real tight, and just starting fast.
Not too many people get excited for fall camp. I don't know if players do. You kind of do for a while, and then it gets hard, right? Where is your mindset at right now as you get ready to get into the season?
I'm excited. I'm excited to get the pads back on and turn it a little bit back into the offense versus defense. I feel like we're a little bit too friendly right now, so I'm excited to get back into that.
All right, we're excited for it. Good luck this year.
Thank you.
That is Tyson Bowes. Again, that conversation happened at Media Day in Sioux Falls in July. Also had a chance to catch up with Nathan LePerry at the event. He was representing the defense at Missouri Valley Football Conference Media Day. LePerry entering his second season in a Coyote uniform. Last year, 4.5 sacks, 5.5 tackles for a loss, and had two of those sacks at Lamar, of course, in his home state of Texas last year. Transferred to USD from North Texas, now entering his second season, and you can tell his confidence has continued to build as he spends time at USD.
Nathan, as you get ready for another season in a Coyote uniform, where's your mindset at? Where are your goals building off of last season for you personally?
For me personally, I just want to play each game better than the last one. So play the first game, then week two, just play better than I did the week before.
People saw you come into the program and they were like, who's this guy? You know, the new guy. You go out there and make some plays. What's kind of your mindset as you go into each play and what are you trying to accomplish? Obviously, anytime you can get a TFL or quarterback sack, it's a big thing. But what's kind of the mindset?
I don't really focus on necessarily making a play before. I mean, obviously, you want to make a play, but that's not really. I'm more so thinking just line up correctly, read my keys correctly, do my job correctly, and if I do all that right, then should end up where the ball is. So,
you look at this this defense going into the second year with a defensive coordinator. What do you like about this unit as a whole defensively?
I like how close we are. I mean, I'd say my 10 favorite guys on the team are 10 other guys out there with me on defense. So I think that'll pay a lot of dividends, especially come week 8, week 10.
What's the D-line like right now as you guys get into fall camp? You know, obviously every year we got turnover in different positions, but that defensive front, what's it going to look like this year?
I think we'll be able to rotate a lot. I honestly think we can put 2, maybe even 3 full groups out there of guys that can play for us. So should be able to rotate a lot of really good players out there.
How much more comfortable does it feel for you going into this year after spending a season in a Coyote uniform?
I feel a lot better, honestly, because I got here last summer. Still learning the defense, especially like the deep parts of it throughout the season. But playing behind a fourth year and I think he was a 5th or 6th year, I don't know, older guys. They were able to teach me a lot. I like to watch their film a lot, and it definitely has helped me learn the defense and be a lot more confident in it.
Obviously, we've had a lot of success the last few years, and success last year going into the quarterfinals of the playoffs. Big question for people is going to be, can this group do it again? What do you see out of the Coyote football as a whole as you get ready for fall camp that excites you about the upcoming year?
Same thing I said about the defense. It's just the whole team is honestly just so close together. Like, everyone's always hanging out. We're always doing something. No one's ever just chilling by themselves. So I think that is a huge thing that separates us from a lot of other teams in this country.
Do you look at the schedule and evaluate it as you get up to a season? Obviously, each game, you know, as you get into game week, you're preparing for one team. But
yeah.
Now you get a chance to look at it as a whole. What do you think about the schedule and what excites you?
I like our schedule. I think our non-conference games are good competition. Obviously, I know Central Connecticut made it. And then obviously going to Boise State, who's now in the Pac-12. So I think we'll definitely be ready for our conference, because our non-conference games will be good competition.
You ready for that home opener yet?
Yeah, I honestly think, no joke, if we played them next week, we'd be able to play them and beat them. So.
Well, it'll be fun. We're excited for it.
Yep.
Thanks for the time. Really
Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Good luck this year.
Thank you.
That is Nathan LaPerry, the Plano, Texas native, in his second season in a Coyote uniform. He'll be a big factor of that Coyote defense here as we get into his second season. Really excited for the upcoming year for Coyote football. No doubt about it. Well, that's episode number one, and those are the type of conversations we'll continue to have here throughout the course of it. Next week, we'll get head football coach Matt Vitzthum. We'll also have head soccer coach Michael Thomas, get kind of a preview of both of those seasons and talk about fall camp and the start of the season for soccer, because they are already underway. They opened up the regular season on Wednesday of this week. They went to Northern Iowa, 4-0 victory. Coyotes had 4 different players score goals, a senior, sophomore, junior, and freshman all scored goals in game number 1 of the season. Game 2 for the soccer team will be at Nebraska Sunday afternoon. They'll play the Huskers down in Lincoln. Volleyball will play in Omaha on Sunday in an exhibition contest. Their season also is very quickly approaching. So we've got it all coming up, and we'll continue to keep you updated on Coyote athletics and all of it as we get closer and closer to kicking off or serving off or whatever, tipping off seasons as they come to us, however you want to look at it. Get your tickets for upcoming fall events at USD. You can always get your tickets at goyotes.com. Big thanks to Nathan LaPerry, Tyson Bowes, and John Schimmel for their time this week. I'm John Thayer. Have yourself a tremendous weekend. As always, stay safe and go Yotes.
Thanks for listening to YoteCast, the official podcast of the University of South Dakota Athletics. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation on the Coyote Sports Network.